It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the crow forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Quick note for everybody, I have decided to split this episode in two because it ran quite long. So this episode is actually just primarily our discussion with Stina Light about urban fantasy. And the second episode, which I'll put a note on as well, will be primarily the interview. So I'll release them at separate times, but you'll have both episodes. Thanks. Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 94.
Handing out badges to writers who are bastards to their characters.
That's it?
Yeah. Stina gets it, and that's all that matters.
Okay. Well, I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And we have with us, obviously, Stina Light. Welcome to the show again.
Hello again.
So,
happy birthday on the air.
Thank you, on the air. This is like the best birthday ever.
She is officially 17 again.
Thank you.
So, in case anybody wants to know, you want to wish her a birthday, you know that she's 17 again.
Happy 17.
Yeah. Or maybe 18's better. I don't know. What else?
Well, I think 18's better because you can drink.
No, you
well, not in this country.
In England, maybe, but not in the United States. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh my God, you're right. I forgot they changed the whole...
I think Stina's been drinking illegally for a few years.
It's 21. We're going to go with 21. Version.
So funny.
Star.
Fabulous.
Cool. So, we wanted to start with a question which hinges off of the episode which you didn't show up for. There was a scheduling mishap, but we did an impromptu discussion episode, and one of the questions was asked how we would define urban fantasy. And we talked about it for about 10, 15 minutes and thought that it'd be a really good way to open up our discussion for this episode. To talk to you, because you essentially write urban fantasy. Granted, it's urban historical fantasy. So our terms are getting sort of
blurry.
Mashed up.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that was my thing last week, was the modern, what I would think of, and Stina, you can obviously agree or disagree, I would think of as the most accepted definition of urban fantasy would be contemporary recognizable spaces, with fantasy thrown in, obviously. However, that means that, I mean, how do you define contemporary? Are Stina's books contemporary or are they historical? And in that case, are they urban fantasy or are they something else? Where is the line drawn, Stina?
Well, for me, urban fantasy is fantasy in an urban setting. And that's it. Okay, hang on. I got to let the cat out. I'm so sorry.
That's
okay. He's crying and it's disturbing. Hang on.
I thought it was a baby for a second there, so.
Where'd she go?
Is she letting him out or killing him? That's going on Twitter.
We think Stina Likes may have just murdered her own cats.
I did not murder my cat. I heard that. No, it's the doors. I'm in a very old house. It was built in 1930. And so the doors are sticky.
I hate that.
They're very loud when you try to open them.
Well, the rumor's out there, so.
Great. Okay, so anyway, urban fantasy. What is it? To me, it's fantasy set in an urban environment, and that's it, really.
Okay.
I like the historical extradited historical moniker on there because most people assume that it is a contemporary setting.
Right.
Because it mostly had been set in a contemporary setting until recently. And to be honest, when I started writing it, I wasn't sure what anyone would categorize it as. And my agent wasn't exactly sure either. But that's how I define it. There are other definitions out there that do exist. And I've said this many times before, that it's a little like asking someone where punk rock originated. Mm-hmm. Everyone has aspects of it correct and inarguably correct, because it is a little confusing. But I believe that the first definition was up in an urban setting, and it also in a contemporary urban setting, like you're saying. But yeah, I kind of did warp it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, because we were, in my opinion, things like Lowtown can almost be classified as an urban fantasy, because the space that it takes place in is very urban. It's not recognizable, though. It's not in a, you know, earth city. It's a fantasy urban space, but it's an urban space. So it's like, I mean, the line can get blurry, because like I said, I would put Lowtown. I obviously would put your books as an urban fantasy, but we've read other books that take place, you know, earlier in the 20th century that are, in my opinion, urban fantasy, but I don't think they're getting classified that way on anybody's shelf.
Huh.
Only because of the fact that they're not contemporary. And I think the biggest part of the field right now is contemporary recognizable spaces.
Yeah. That's questionable.
Right. And I think that's why the line gets, I think that's where it blurs, is because what most people are used to is the contemporary facet.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that one of the things that Paul Weimer had said, or Weimer, I can't remember if he's German, but he's the one that suggested the topic, and he left a comment on the last episode, and he had said that, particular to Lowtown, he didn't consider it urban fantasy primarily because it was set in a secondary fantasy world.
Right.
And that for him, I guess, he would see urban fantasy as it necessarily must take place in our own world in some way, which means still that he would kind of narrow it down and say specifically it must be contemporary. But in our schema, we would kind of say that, well, as long as it's set in our world in something that's vaguely an urban space, it could still technically be urban fantasy, even if it's set in 1800s England, in London or something, which would be fairly urban late 1800s. So,
oh, yeah. Sure. That's kind of how I wrap my head around it. But
yeah, I mean, you'd kind of have, it's really difficult, because I just think, then what do we do with all this other fantasy that's not set, you know, like in the 80s?
And I think it's kind of fabulous that so much stuff is cropping up in different places. And then you also have like the whole subset of people who think that it's not urban fantasy unless it's romance. So,
well, that's
right.
Blah.
Yeah, and I wholly disagree with that one. But yes, that's just me.
I don't buy that at all. I'm sorry.
I mean, I think it's fine to have the romance in your urban fantasy, but I don't think that necessarily.
I don't think that's what makes it an urban fantasy.
Makes it urban fantasy. No. Yeah, no. I mean, I tend to agree with you, just that it has to be the urban space. Hence the reason that I'm willing to put Lowtown in there, and things that take place, you know, 150 years ago. Because I mean, like a book that was essentially Dickens but with fantasy in it would be about as urban fantasy as you could possibly get.
Well, I guess the question then becomes, is how do we separate the Gothic from urban fantasy? Because if you're talking about something like Dickens, right, if you inserted like vampires and stuff in it, like we take something like Dracula, which, if I recall correctly, and please somebody correct me, technically a lot of what happens in that book takes place in a city.
About, yeah, half
the book, except the part where they go after Dracula and they try to kill him or whatever.
Yeah.
But the parts where Dracula comes to the city, right, well, this is a fairly Gothic novel. So is there a separation, or?
However, it's a horror book. I'm sorry. It's horror.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that the city doesn't play a role.
No, it doesn't. And there's, music is an aspect of urban fantasy also, and there's no music in there either.
Not really.
Well, it was early on, the musical aspect, the punk rock music, or any music at all, rock music, it was all an aspect of it early.
Early urban.
Yeah. Border town, right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, to think about that, I hadn't really considered that as part of what I think of as urban fantasy.
Yeah, but it's an extra aspect.
Yeah. Throw that in there to the mix, because, you know, it
wasn't because you're not confused
as it was.
Yeah, well, then clearly your books are urban fantasy, then.
Yes.
Because at least particularly, I mean, actually in both books, I mean, there's a huge emphasis placed on sort of music culture.
And the environs. I mean, that's my thing, is that for an urban fantasy to really be an urban fantasy, the environment has to be almost a character. And I think it is in your books. I mean, it's a setting, yes, but it feeds into the rest of the story. I mean, and it gives the rest of the story much more of its feel than a lot of books do with their setting, where it's just kind of the background. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what really makes an urban fantasy, which is why I put Lowtown into that mix, because the city in Lowtown is a character unto itself.
Yeah.
It's a very important facet of the book, and we've read some other things. I mean, and now, actually, I can say that Michael Jordan's book, Mere Maze, is not urban fantasy, because it's the setting, but it doesn't play a big role in the story.
I don't know if I agree with that.
It plays a role in the same sense that the city plays a role in Dracula, which is... I think it's more of a background. It's where it's set, but it's not a character.
I don't know if I would agree with that with Michael Jordan. I need to reread Dracula before I say anything, because I can't remember. I can't recall how the city is actually represented in Dracula. But I would not necessarily agree that that's true of Mirror Maze, particularly because I think one of the facets of the city as a character is how social relations are portrayed in the city itself. And when we're talking about, and Michael Jordan set in, was it like late 1800s?
Yeah, it's Victorian. Yeah,
Victorian era. The social like codes and mores, and the way they're enacted and where they're enacted, and the space of the city in that respect, I think it's fairly important. I think
and
the problem
one,
is
though it's more it's less the city and more the house.
Oh, I mean, that's perhaps fair. Yeah, I guess that's perhaps fair. It's maybe that the city is not explored, that we're only gifted maybe three or four spaces.
The house gives you all those things, the social mores, the delineation of roles and things like that.
The city itself does that.
Right.
There are social mores how you interact outside of the house too, but we don't get a lot of that in Jordan's
book.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So.
And she's also moving from city to city fairly consistently. So.
Okay, so it's a cross-cultural potential urban fantasy.
I think we've complicated the issue just enough, don't you?
Labels. Don't you just love them?
I think they're fun. Although China Mieville, I missed his talk at the International Conference on the Fantastic and the Arts, but he did apparently say something rather provocative about labels, and he said that something effective that labels are they I guess you would say take the piss out of what makes genre so radical and compelling, that to sit down and sort of think about rigid labels and how to define genre, whatever the genre happens to be, actually sort of takes away from what was initially radical and what was initially exciting about that genre to begin with, because you're now sort of compartmentalizing and cannibalizing it.
But I think it's a good thing, because the moment somebody declares a boundary, artists always have this tendency to like go straight for that border and screw with it immediately. Yeah. It's just what they do. So I think it's a positive thing, because it's kind of waving the red flag in front of the bull, as it were. Because I think we all sit back and wonder a little bit about, well, you know, if that's the way the label is supposed to work, what if I do this completely other different thing with it?
Yeah. I think that's
interesting,
too.
Those are
some
of my favorite books. I mean, because there's a guy, I mean, China Medieval, perfect example of, I'm sorry, I think we can call many of his books urban fantasy, if you're going with the label. And not recognizable spaces.
Sure. But Mayville, I think that would be interesting if that had been brought up at his as a question, as a sort of point to his talk, you know.
Would
yes,
he have
labels are
urban fantasy.
No, not the urban fantasy. What Stina was saying about that, yes, but the labels also produce something, a discourse we can ride counter against. Like, it's in fact the fact that we have labels and that sort of define boundaries that lets genre effectively say, well, screw that, I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I think that would be a very compelling point to sort of bring up with him. And maybe if I get a chance to see him at another talk, or if we get a chance to interview him, that would be something that we should talk to him about.
Mark it down.
Yes, master, I shall do thy bidding.
Excellent.
So why don't we kind of, we'll kind of sidetrack this, and this is the second time we've kind of covered it, but maybe I think we're going to have to do, maybe get a bunch of urban fantasy authors on and have a round table where we try to hash it out in a way that will never get us the answers, but it still offers us, you know, a 45-minute discussion on the topic.
Awesome.
Because I don't think we're ever going to have the answer. I mean, it's sort of like the definition
no,
of
so
sci-fi. I mean, we're never going to have a proper definition. The only definition that works for sci-fi is, it's sci-fi if I say it is. That's
right.
It.
Hence the reason that you and I have been arguing for how many years now over whether or not science fiction has to take place in the future.
It must be set in the future. Period.
Yeah, that's
period. It's principal initial time period must be placed in the future. It doesn't necessarily have to.
I agree with that.
Exactly. I don't agree with it either. We've literally been arguing about this since we met. I think it's been like, what, 4 years now?
Sorry. It becomes alternate history if it's set at any other point.
Whatever.
I think it's that science is what is important. I mean, if they're working with science, there was like a wonderful book. My God, no, I can't remember the name of it. It just went right out of my head. Shoot. It was wonderful, too. Set in the 1700s, North America, about a slave who was being experimented on.
That sounds fascinating.
Oh, my God, it was awesome. Heartbreaking and awesome.
Wait, are you talking about the... You're not talking about the woman with the like immortal gene, are you?
No.
That was a good book, though. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but it was a very scientific kind of take on things, and oh my God, I can't remember the name of the book. I feel so bad. Shoot. I can't remember the book. It's been too long, and I was up too late last night. And that brain cell that contained that information is temporarily offline.
Well, we can perhaps, if you remember it later, you can bring it up. But
okay, that would be great.
So why don't we we'll dive into sidetrack.
The title I think was called "The Pox Party" or something like that, because smallpox was a part of the experiment, and it was the name of a person. I'm almost there. I've almost got it.
The Astonishing Life of Octavian Nothing.
That's it! Octavian Nothing. That's
I looked it up for you.
Aha!
Thank you so much! Thank you. Octavian Nothing. It was one of my favorite books when I was a book people. I used to push the crud out of that one. It was awesome. But I felt like that was science fiction.
I'll have to read it. I've heard of it. I haven't read it. And I will sidetrack that, and I will have to now go read it. I don't think I own it, but I will now. I will soon.
I know, because that looks fantastic.
It looks really good. I've heard some talks about that particular book, and apparently does a lot of very interesting things with not narrative so much as the type, the way the narrative is portrayed. Like think of something like House of Leaves, you know, where it does all the weird stuff with the text. If I recall correctly, Octavia Nothing does something like that too.
I don't remember seeing that, but then it's been a long time since I've read it. But stuck with me quite a bit.
It may be confusing it with another book, but either way, I'm going to read it now. So.
Oh, yeah, I remember that series.
Yeah. But okay, so why don't we, we'll put a big roadblock and we'll go into what this interview is supposed to be about, which is the fact that Stina Light has a new book.
Yay.
Called Of Blue Skies from Pain. It is a fantastic book. If you haven't read the first one, you should read it, although I think you can kind of read this one as a standalone. Well enough. Although I would really recommend start from the beginning, just because it gives you more sense of the main character, Liam. But you could still read this one as a standalone if you so chose. Just start with the first one, or I will come and hunt you down and force you to read it against your will. That does it for this half of the episode. Stay tuned for later in the week when the actual interview goes up. Thanks. Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction!
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.